Erie to Lebanon, Harrisburg to White Oak, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, tolls on the Pennsylvania Turnpike keep going up, and there's no end in sight to the fare increases. Matthew Briette from the Commonwealth Partners Chamber of Entrepreneurs is here to explain why. Revenue numbers for 2019 are in, and the gaming industry in Pennsylvania continues to rake in the dough. Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi have an Allegheny Institute report. And free trade is essential for the success of many sectors of Pennsylvania's economy. Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania takes a closer look on this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Matt Briette from the Commonwealth Partners Chamber of Entrepreneurs in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. A special election was held in the 190th State House District in Philadelphia this past week to fill the seat whose last two occupants resigned in the face of criminal charges. In what is a lopsided Democrat district, Ronnie Green, a business agent for the Service Employees International Union, took 86% of the vote against her Republican challenger. Green will succeed former Representative Movita Johnson-Harrell, who resigned and is now serving a prison term for stealing money from a nonprofit which she ran. Johnson-Harrell, in turn, replaced former Representative Vanessa Lowry Brown, who also resigned, she in the wake of theft and perjury charges. With the pending retirement of State House Speaker Mike Terzi, speculation is swirling that the number two Republican in the House, Majority Leader Brian Cutler of Lancaster County, will become the next speaker. Cutler spoke at the monthly luncheon of the Pennsylvania Press Club last week. He dodged questions about the leadership scramble, instead focused on legislative accomplishments of the House over the first year of the current session. Cutler touted election law reforms and changes to child sexual abuse laws as part of a 20% increase in legislation passed so far this season. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. As dependable as the dropping of the ball in Times Square, every new year is met with an increase in tolls to travel the Pennsylvania Turnpike. And much of that revenue doesn't even go to maintain or improve the roadway. Here to explain why fares keep rising and how we got into this situation is Matt Briette. Matt is president and CEO of the Commonwealth Partners Chamber of Entrepreneurs. He is heard regularly as part of Lincoln Radio Journal's Capital Watch crew. Matt, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Matt, everybody who travels the Pennsylvania Turnpike, we know that every year, big increases in tolls, and this has been going on for a number of years. And you recently had an op-ed on this subject that really explained well what was going on. And in a couple of minutes, we'll talk about some of the proposals that you've made that would have changed all that. But before we get into that, what is driving these annual significant fare increases on the Pennsylvania Turnpike?
Well, over 10 years ago, a deal was made in the House and Senate and signed by Governor Ed Rendell that would use toll rate increases on the Pennsylvania Turnpike to fund infrastructure costs across the state as well as mass transit costs. And so in order to do so, the Turnpike Commission went into massive bonded debt, and that is spinning off some of these monies. But the challenge is that they really can't keep up with the payments to PennDOT from the Turnpike Commission despite ever-increasing tolls to travel the highway. Today, if you're driving from one end of the highway, the toll road, to the other, it's upwards of over $65, and that's not counting the return trip. So we're talking about a massive increase just over the last 14 years or so.
This money that is being diverted from the Turnpike, explain a little bit more. It's not going, not only is the money not going into Turnpike, some of it's not actually even going into roads.
No, this is, we're funding mass transit. So folks that are utilizing mass transit in Philadelphia and in Pittsburgh, this is subsidizing the rides there rather than the actual people utilizing mass transit. So you have the toll road taxpayers that are paying for people's rides on buses and trains. You also have money that's going into PennDOT that, of course, isn't always filling potholes. Sometimes it's beautification projects along roads. And so a lot of people think that their gas tax dollars are only funding our roads, highways, and bridges. But we even know that the Motor License Fund is siphoning off a lot of money for the state police. So whether that's a good policy decision or not, the only thing we do know is that that's money that can't go into our infrastructure.
So if I drive between Harrisburg and Pittsburgh or Harrisburg and Philadelphia, which personally I frequently do, I never, once I get to either of those two cities, use mass transit, yet my toll dollars are helping to pay for that mass transit that I never use?
That's right. This has been the way that, unfortunately, some of the negotiations and deals that have been cut is that those who use the toll roads are paying for mass transit that, like you just stated, they never use.
So this money is being lobbed over to PennDOT. Matt, I recall back when this whole deal was hatched, there was supposed to be a revenue stream to go to the Turnpike Commission by tolling Interstate 80. That never actually happened. Can you explain to our listeners what went wrong?
Yeah, in fact, that was Plan B, because the original proposal by Governor Rendell, which was one that when I was at the Commonwealth Foundation as the president there, supported, it was a private public-private partnership of bringing in a private operator that would run the turnpike. They'd have standards of performance. There would be limits on the tolls. This was the original proposal that was considered. But because the Turnpike Commission has long operated like a little fiefdom and been the playground for patronage for elected officials for a long, long time, they were able to get Plan B considered. And part of that was to say, well, let's toll Interstate 80 and use the revenue and put this under the control of the Turnpike Commission. And we said at the very outset, knowing that federal regulations and approval process, that that was just not going to fly, that it would be rejected by the federal government, which in fact it was. But the Turnpike Commission was still going to be on the hook for all of this bonded debt that they had hoped they would be able to pay off using the tolls off of Interstate 80. And so fortunately for the people that live along the I-80 corridor, that was rejected. But unfortunately for the toll payers of the Turnpike, they're the ones that are footing that bill now.
We are talking with Matt Briette, who is president and CEO of Commonwealth Partners, Chamber of Entrepreneurs. We're talking about the Pennsylvania Turnpike Commission, the never-ending toll increases. And Matt, these never-ending toll increases, partially, largely, as a result of money being sent over to PennDOT as required by state law, but that state law, in just a couple of years, hits its limit. Will those transfers to PennDOT end at that point, or does this become a legislative hot potato?
Well, it's going to be a legislative hot potato because we're already looking at the Turnpike Commission being less and less able to make those payments. In fact, the Auditor General, Eugene D. Pasquale, said that this is just unsustainable and that this is not only not putting a dent in the debt of the Turnpike, it's actually forcing less people to use the Turnpike. So people are finding different routes. And it's absolutely critical for the Turnpike Commission to keep people on that toll road if they want to pay for all of their debt. So, again, the Auditor General, who he doesn't mention this, but he actually voted for this when he was a state legislator, he has concluded that the Turnpike is on the road to insolvency, that the way that you have the debt payments, yet the toll revenues are not keeping up. This is a bad concoction.
You referenced an idea that had been floated. The governor even seemed to have a little bit of buy-in of a public-private partnership. Can you tell us a little bit more about how that would work?
What was on the table was a proposal for bringing in a for-profit operator who would bring in nearly $13 billion in upfront money. It would have been cash that could have been invested into infrastructure to pay for all the things that we've been trying to pay for with the current scheme. But some of the other benefits of not only getting upfront money you would transfer all the financial risk to the private operator, so they would own that. There were improved road performance measures, and what that means is that they would have to fill a pothole or remove roadkill under certain time limits. And then there were also limits on the toll increases. In fact, had we adopted this back in 2006, the tolls for that one-way trip that I noted earlier would have been only $39.95. We're talking about a $50 savings for a border-to-border round trip if we'd have gone this route, on top of having that upfront money of $13 billion that could have been invested into our roads, highways, and bridges. And unfortunately, it was a lot of the politics of the Capitol building, with little fiefdoms and sinecures being protected, that pushed that off of the table and allowed for the Turnpike Commission's plan to get adopted, which unfortunately Ed Rendell signed, and that's why we're dealing with what we're dealing with today.
Is it still possible, Matt, all these years later, with all this bonded indebtedness that's taken place, not only in order to pay transfers to PennDOT, but just to try to keep improving the Turnpike, which we'll point out is the oldest such superhighway in the country with a lot of capital needs, is it still possible to go to a public-private partnership, or has it become so larded up with debt that that's no longer an option?
Yeah, unfortunately, it has so much debt and the tolls are so high right now that it would be very difficult to find a partner who'd be willing to take that on. It may not be impossible, just because private operators that do this around the world are able to squeeze out inefficiencies and improve performance. So I don't think we ought to write it off that just because our legislators and former governor put us in this situation as it's something that we can't get ourselves out of. But it's going to be much more difficult today than it would have been if we'd have done this right 14 years ago.
Well, we'll continue to keep an eye on this as it goes along. We have been talking with Matt Briette, who is President and Chief Executive Officer of Commonwealth Partners Chamber of Entrepreneurs. Matt, tell us a little bit about the Commonwealth Partner Chamber of Entrepreneurs, and also where can folks go on the web to learn more about your organization?
You bet. Commonwealth Partners is a membership association for entrepreneurs and philanthropists that want to advocate for free market policy reforms to improve our economic and educational opportunities in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And folks that are interested can go to thecommonwealthpartners.com.
Matt Briette from the Commonwealth Partners Chamber of Entrepreneurs. Matt, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Lumen.
2019 ushered in even more expansion of Pennsylvania's gaming industry. Here with a look at the financial numbers are Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi from the Allegheny Institute for Public Policy. Eric?
Hello, and welcome to the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm Eric Montardi. Joining me today is the Executive Director of the Allegheny Institute, Frank Gamrat. Frank, how are you doing today?
Good, Eric. How are you?
Not too bad. Thank you very much. Frank, your most recent brief, which is available at www.alleghenyinstitute.org, looks at gaming revenue in 2019. And I know you have some interesting stuff for our listeners, because way back when, we started just with slot machines.
That's right.
And this brief here speaks a lot to what's going on with the expansion of gaming. But let's start at the beginning, because slot machines were first. They still represent the biggest bulk of gaming revenues. So why don't you tell our listeners about how they performed in 2019 compared to the year earlier?
In January, when the data was released, the Pennsylvania Gaming Control Board came out and said, well, gaming revenue is up 4.5% in 2019, calendar 2019, over 2018. And you think, well, okay, what does that mean? You have the new avenues of gaming, plus you have the slot machines. And of course, you know, let's look at the slot machines first, because, well, when gaming was sold in Pennsylvania, it was sold as, okay, we're going to have slot machines, and the proceeds from slot machines are going to go to mitigate property taxes for school districts. That's how it was sold to us. Well, slot machines came into being in 2006. And if you look at the way the taxing volume works on slot machines, they're taxed at a 54% rate, of which 34% goes off to this property tax relief fund. And then you have a small 1%, 2% to the local municipalities and counties, the local assessment. And then you had some going into the Horse Racing Development Fund and some going into a Tourism and Economic Development Fund. So the bulk of the tax money on slot machines is going to property tax relief. So someone said to me, well, doesn't all gaming go into property tax? And the answer, of course, is no. Slots is still the main focus for property tax relief, and it has been declining. The slots' biggest year was 2012. They had like $2.6 billion in gross terminal revenues that year, and lately we're sitting at like $2.3 billion in gross terminal revenues. You know, you've seen this drop. In 2012, the top was $2.47 billion from just 11 casinos. In 2019, it was $2.363 billion. So it's been dropping rather steadily since then. It's really something that you kind of ask, okay, well, what's going on here? Is it the advent of the newer games? Well, in 2010, the debut of table games happened along. And table games, of course, is banking and non-banking. Banking is against another player, like a poker game. Non-banking is against the house, like a blackjack game. And so this was something to keep ahead of the neighboring states. You know, at the time, only New Jersey and West Virginia had gaming, but we introduced table games because West Virginia introduced table games. We had to stay ahead. Now, table games has, of course, been fairly steady. It has increased a little bit over the last couple years, specifically last year. And what you have is you have this increase in table games, but the increase is a very small portion of the overall growth to gaming revenues in total. Gaming revenues are up $146.1 million. Gaming and table games is only 24.8. This is about 20%. So the rest of this, of course, falls on these other forms of gaming.
And then in 2017, there was a new state law that came about, and there is just a large contingent of new options here.
Right.
So why don't you give our listeners some background on what's newly available, what came online, and how they perform?
Absolutely. In 2019, we had two forms of gaming with their first full years. Pennsylvania was able to play slots and table games on the internet beginning in 2019. Now, internet slot machines are taxed at the 54%, and again, 34% does go to the property tax relief fund, but the internet table games, you know, table games are only taxed at a lesser rate of 16%, with only taxed at 14%, with 12% going off to the general fund and 2% going off to the local share. So the internet table games are the same way. They still are only taxed at 14%, with 12% going off to the general fund. So after that, you have the Commonwealth Financing Authority getting some money out of internet slots and not the racehorsing industry. So the chopping up of the tax revenue certainly takes a different turn with internet. And then, of course, you had these things called video gaming terminals, which are at 20 different truck stops across the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, where there's 100 total machines, and they collected $2.3 million in revenues. Now, their tax is 52%, but 42% of that goes to the general fund, not to the property tax relief fund. And then, of course, you had in 2018, fantasy gaming became popular. And for those of you not familiar with fantasy gaming, it's where a player drafts a team of athletes, typically done in football, but you can do it in any of the other sports, basketball, hockey, baseball, whatever, and you compete against someone else's team. And, of course, you win whatever money is available at that kind of thing. And fantasy gaming brought in $15.3 million. And then, of course, the one that everybody was looking forward to was sports wagering. Sports wagering debuted at the very end of calendar 2019, and only had a month and a half, really. It got about $2.5 million. But then the question comes up, is Pennsylvania willing to stake its economy on gaming versus traditional manufacturing or traditional services or financial services, something on those lines? Tend to look at the economy. We looked at the types of jobs that are in gaming. Now, the Bureau of Labor Statistics does have jobs at the state level in something called amusements, gambling, and recreation. In December 2019, there are 58,500 jobs in this sector. Now, you go back to December 2018, and it was 62.2, you've lost 3,700 jobs just in the year. Well, we can go back even further than that and look at what happened over the last 10 years. And we're 52.4 10 years ago. And so you had a bit of an increase in those jobs of about 10%. Now, we look at the national, and that's the same sector, amusements, gambling, recreation, it climbed 30% over the decade. So Pennsylvania, while it has increased 10% over the 10 years, it has not kept up with the national rate of 30%. So not keeping pace, but, you know, is this the type of job that you want to base your economy? We've enjoyed a very nice national economy over the last couple of years, and people have more discretionary spending. But then the question comes up, what happens when that discretionary spending starts to slide? At some point, hopefully, you know, many, many months away, we're going to hit a recession. And when we hit a recession, is that money going to start to fade away? And this is money that these politicians in Pennsylvania have really come to rely on, not just for property tax relief, but all the new forms of gaming, from tables to sports wagering, goes to the general fund in some form or fashion. And are they going to get hooked on this money? And what will they do when it stops coming in?
Frank, it's great stuff. And again, our listeners can go to our website, which is www.alleghenyinstitute.org. They can find this brief, and they can find earlier pieces on gaming as well in our archives. For Frank Gamrat, this is Eric Montardi. This has been the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal.
The pause in the U.S.-China trade war and international efforts to ensure fair trade are developments that ensure free trade for many sectors of the Pennsylvania economy. So says Ashley Klingensmith of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
Over three decades ago, President Reagan addressed the American people and said, "My fellow Americans, our founding fathers believed that free trade was worth fighting for. Today, trade is at the core of the alliance that secure the peace and guarantee our freedom. The balance of trade has become a very emotional issue. There are some that seem to believe that we should run up the American flag in defense of our markets. But the last time the U.S. tried that, there was enormous economic distress. Free and fair trade brings growth and opportunity. And high trade barriers, which is often called protectionism, undermines our industries, harms exports, destroys jobs, and damages our overall economy. I don't call it protectionism, I call it destructionism. The expansion of the international economy is not a foreign invasion. It is an American triumph, one we worked hard to achieve, and the path to an even brighter future for America. At Americans for Prosperity, we support free trade. Trade helps build strong communities and drives American progress, creating jobs, fueling small business growth, and supplying hardworking families with everyday goods and services at affordable prices. Tariffs and other protectionist policies are already having a detrimental impact on PA manufacturers, farmers, and consumers, and additional trade barriers would only make those things worse. Americans for Prosperity supports eliminating and reducing all unjust trade barriers to open markets further. Since the end of World War II, America was an architect of trade liberalization, championing international trade organizations and reforms that greatly reduced tariffs worldwide. And in response, global merchandise exports have risen from $54 billion in 1948 to almost $20 trillion in 2018. The U.S. has prospered and trade has expanded. Despite having less than 5% of the world's population, our country produces almost a quarter of global output. U.S. GDP has reached $20.5 trillion in 2018. Employment is at a record level of over 158 million, and real value added by manufacturers, $2.16 trillion in 2018, has never been larger. Engaging with the global economy has been a very good thing for the United States and American workers. Here in Pennsylvania, our farmers have prospered when we can sell our goods to consumers around the world. Our state is one of the top 10 exporting states in the country. We rank among the nation's top producers in milk, poultry, eggs, fruits, nuts, hogs, corn, and we are the nation's leader in mushroom production and in shipments of canned fruit and vegetable specialty products, chocolate, and cocoa products. Overall, PA exported in excess of $41 billion worth of goods in 2018. We imported $88 billion worth of goods in 2018. And according to one estimate, almost a fifth of all jobs in our state, 1.4 million jobs, are supported by trade. Jobs in exporting plants pay on average up to 18% more than similar jobs in non-exporting plants. Free trade has helped build strong communities across our Commonwealth, and we should continue to champion the opportunities it has afforded PA workers, businesses, and families. There are alternatives to protectionist policies and tariffs. The World Trade Organization appellate body has a dispute settlement system that can and should ensure global trade rules can be predictably enforced. In December, alongside 25 free trade and industry organizations, we sent a letter to President Trump urging the administration to support consensus reform proposals. Last month, Americans for Prosperity commended the announced Phase 1 agreement that effectively postponed a tariff increase scheduled for December and urged an end to the trade war. Americans thrive with trade. Free and open exchange, where Americans can buy and sell with others on mutually beneficial terms, drives the innovations and knowledge that create new technologies which make all our lives better. If you agree, please visit TradeBuildsAmerica.com. I'm Ashley Klingensmith, State Director with Americans for Prosperity.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our website, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 25 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WLSW-FM and WQTA-AM in Connellsville, along with WPGM-FM in Danville, Pennsylvania. And the 2020 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is just a few weeks away. The Pennsylvania Leadership Conference, of course, the premier gathering of grassroots conservatives every year in the Keystone State. This year's conference will be March 27th and 28th at the Radisson Penn Harris Convention Center in Camp Hill. Fox News contributor Jason Chaffetz will be the featured dinner speaker, along with former U.S. Senator Rick Santorum, Brent Bozell from the Media Research Center, Congressman Scott Perry, John Gizzi of Newsmax, and Dr. Paul Kengor from Grove City College, along with Kellyanne Pidgeon from Armed and Feminine, and many others. There will be panel presentations, workshops, and networking. For complete information and to register for the 2020 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference, go to paleadershipconference.org. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations. They include the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. ¶¶
Thank you.